the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Welcome back. It is Will O'Callaghan in for Matt Cooper. It is time to talk the last word on America. We'll be talking particularly about the bombing campaign around Iran in a moment. Cal Thomas, Mary McKeown are with me. Mary, if I can kick things off, Thursday, Donald Trump, the US president, is going to be giving a speech. Our understanding is, based on some documents that have been declassified, that he'd be claiming that the voting machine vulnerabilities were the reason that he had won the election in 2020. And he's going to claim that, once again, that he beat Joe Biden. This is what we understand he's going to say on Thursday, Marion.
Yeah, pardon me if I sound a little fatigued by all this. It's like, you know, really get over it. It's astonishing that he is in power and that the Republicans are in control of both houses of Congress and he is still beating this drum. But I think what he wants to do this time, that there is an additional twist, if you will, in that he's targeting Georgia in particular, which was, of course, where the Secretary of State back in 2020, Brad Raffensperger, refused Trump's exhortation to find an extra 78,000 votes or whatever he wanted, and also released Trump's request to the Washington Post, I believe. Now he's going after the two Democratic senators for Georgia, John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock. Now, it was really unusual back in 2020 to have two Republicans. Georgia's a deep red state, and you had two Republican senators who were replaced by two Democratic senators. Really, surprising to a lot of people. And now Trump wants to say that the only reason this happened was because the voting was rigged. And of course, this would then discredit John Ossoff in particular, who's seen by many as a leading light for the Democrats' hopes in 2020 and you know, is also running for re-election in Georgia in the midterms to hold on to his Senate seat. So we'll see what Trump says. You know, he's got that quack Bill Pulte apparently claiming they found new evidence. There may also be a twist, Will, in that there's been a lot of speculation that Maduro, the former Venezuelan president, is going to make a plea deal in New York. And as part of that, if he would say, oh yeah, Venezuela was involved in rigging voting machines, you know, obviously Fox News had to pay nearly $800 million for defaming one of the voting companies by saying that. But I'm very sceptical about this and whether it'll go anywhere.
Cal, your take on this? Is this a case of making a very clever political play, particularly with the Congress elections coming up at the end of this year, that you put that doubt into people's minds about the Democrats and you use this politically for the Republican Party later this year? Or is this about Donald Trump's ego and him saying, I definitely won in 2020?
Well, there's a lot to unpack there, Will. First of all, I've covered a lot of these speeches. They're never done until they're done. Nobody knows what the final speech is going to look like, probably not even Trump. If he sticks to the script, it could be something completely different than Reuters is reporting, which is the only source on this. I can't imagine that he would go back to that in a major national televised address. I know he does it a lot at rallies. I know he does it at interviews that he does, many of the interviews. But I think people are fed up with that, frankly, as Marion was suggesting. They don't want to revisit the past, especially that far back. They want to know about the future. What is going on with the Strait of Hormuz? One day, Trump is bombing Iran. Another day, he says there's a memorandum of understanding and we're going to stop bombing. Then he says, we're going to start bombing again because they violated the memorandum of understanding. I don't know what the policy is. I don't know what the goal is. Clearly, the Ayatollahs in Tehran are not going to bend their knee to bombing. President says if he's assassinated, which on signs in Tehran by demonstrators saying kill Trump, he's given orders to unleash thousands of bombs on Tehran. Well, I don't think that's going to happen because he wouldn't be around to exercise the power. It's just crazy stuff going on, and most Americans would like to know what the end game is.
Well, let's hear from Donald Trump himself then. So here's a clip where Donald Trump responded to a question about the bombing in Iran, and he was asked, is this now becoming the new normal for America? Have a listen.
No, well, you know, we're in Vietnam for 19 years. We're here for 4 months. So I think we've done a lot. We've knocked out their Navy in a period of 1 month. And we're hitting them very hard, and it'll continue, and we'll see what happens. But we're knocking out all of their offensive capability, and we're controlling the straits. We're putting the blockade back. And it's a blockade not for anybody but Iran. In other words, anybody doing business with Iran can't go through. Everyone else will be able to go through. So it's a blockade. It's a very strong blockade because they're stone cold crazy. They are crazy. And we're not going to put it up. Yeah, I want to be reimbursed because we're protecting a very rich portion of the world. We're spending money. And so what we've done is we are going to be reimbursed for protection. We're protecting by the countries that we're helping. But we think it's appropriate that we don't need them. You know, we have more oil than any other country in the world. When you add Venezuela, which has been amazing, which has tremendous amounts of oil that we can. So we have them in a position that they don't have any military. There's not a thing they can do about it. All they have is fake news because they have the fake news would rather see us lose the war than win the war, which is really treasonous, in a certain way. So we're doing another very major attack tonight. They want to make a deal. They came back. We made a deal 2 days ago, and they want to make a deal. They've been negotiating for 47 years, but nobody's ever hit them militarily. We're hitting them very hard. Thank you very much, everyone.
Right, okay. Marion, to pick up the point, there's an awful lot to unpack in that 90 seconds or so from President Donald Trump there. But what seems very clear is that we really are not sure, as Calla said, from day to day, where this is going to move next. Quite aside from the president saying that the blockade will continue in its current form and that these strikes are going to continue, we have no idea what time this is going to be fresh talks or where this is actually going to go.
Yeah, it really is chaotic. And I think it's been reports in the past hour thereabouts that this insane 20% fee on all cargo transiting the waterway, that has now been abandoned. And just to give you a clue about this, the insanity of this, remember, Trump is talking about putting protection money, slapping a 20% protection money on his own allies, on his allies in the Gulf. There were about 3,000 ships a month that moved through the Strait of Hormuz. Their average cargo was about $150 million. So if you were to take 20% of that, that is a $90 billion a month shakedown that Trump was proposing, again, on his allies, not on his enemies. So it seems that is, in the last hour or so, has gone by the wayside. But who knows where we'll be later tonight? Who knows where he'll be tomorrow? This is just absolute chaos.
Cal, people asking for protection money of 20% for everything going through here. This sounds more 1920s Chicago than 2020s Earth, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, let's remember what Secretary of State Marco Rubio said just a few weeks ago. He said the Strait of Hormuz is supposed to be open and should not be charging any kind of tariff or any other amount of money or any source of money on that strait. Well, all of a sudden now, Trump's going to do it like a toll road. I mean, this is the frustration that a lot of even conservatives like me feel. There is no direction. There is no goal. I wouldn't be comparing this to Vietnam, of all things. Mm. Good heavens, what a thing to remember. 4 months, he says. It's only been 4 months. Well, he said at the beginning it was only going to be a couple of weeks. It was going to be a fast in and out. We're going to destroy them and everything will be fine. Well, now it's 4 months. Well, how much longer is it going to be? The Ayatollahs are not going to bow the knee to America. Even if they're killed, they think they're going to do a beam me up, Scotty, right to heaven and get all those virgins. That's something that no secular Westerner is going to be able to overcome.
Well, the other thing as well, Cal, based on all the polling in the USA, there seems to be very little appetite among the American people for this situation to draw out much longer.
Yeah, well, that's what, of course, the Ayatollahs are counting on. You talk about the lessons of Vietnam. That was, as far as the media were concerned, when they turned on them, especially the great Walter Cronkite of CBS News. Lyndon Johnson said, if I've lost Cronkite, I've basically lost the war. So the Ayatollahs are counting on this. They think that by stringing it out, by what the great Muhammad Ali used to call the rope-a-dope, that they're going to get Trump to change his mind, change his policies, because the polls are going down. It's not looking good for Republicans in the fall election, as you mentioned. So that's their strategy. But I don't see how we're going to overcome that.
Marion, when it comes to the situation in the Middle East, when the language was so brash at the outset, is it very difficult for the USA to actually have any type of climb down here? Because it seemed a few weeks ago, once the strait was back opening and was almost seemed like there's a bit of re-engagement when it came to the talks, that maybe it could move in a certain direction. But now we're back at the point of strikes happening again. It seems to me like this is going to draw on for quite a while.
Yeah, and I absolutely agree with what Cal just said there. I think that the important thing to remember is that the price of oil has now gone up again by about 10%. There, the talk of inflation and all kinds of things and job creation and the US economy is coming down the pipe with new information over the next couple of days. But you've got these midterms in less than 4 months now. And, you know, America does not want to be bogged down in the war that's costing it real money at home in terms of the price of gas, in terms of the price of goods, in terms of all kinds of things. And that's without any American lives being lost so far, other than these six Americans, and I'm not diminishing that, whose lives were lost in the first or second day of these attacks. It's really bad news. And I think the point about, I don't think Trump cares. I mean, normally, if a president says something and then does a complete about face 24 hours later, that would really undermine their credibility. But because Trump has no real ideology or no real political principles, he only has his own principles of self-aggrandizement and self-enrichment. So he can turn on a dime. He can change his mind about anything, because when you're not anchored in any real beliefs, it's quite easy to do. And America is used to that now. They're used to him contradicting himself three times before sunset. So I don't think it would be embarrassing for in a normal American presidency, but I don't think it is for this one.
Indeed. Just to wrap up on this segment, Kyle, when it comes to conservatives in America right now, is their main concern going to be the cost of goods and the cost of fuel? Bearing in mind that Donald Trump on his last election cycle for this presidency was determined to bring down the cost of things for Americans, I presume that's more important than any ideological battle that might be with Iran.
Well, I don't think they can be separated, Will, but the thing is that the Democrats don't really have anything. They don't have a policy for bringing down gas prices or housing prices or rent or anything. They talk about it. Look at Mamdani in New York. He promised free bus rides. Well, he chucked that away. And you have a new study that just published today in the New York Post, where $11 billion worth of tax money has left the state because people are leaving due to the high taxes there. So, and there's no Democrat leader. You can't point to anybody who is really on fire in the Democrat Party. Not Kamala Harris, not the governor of California, Newsom. There's no leadership there. So I think if Republicans need an issue here, they would just attack the Democrats saying, what are you going to do? And what have you done in the past? We had inflation higher under Joe Biden. We had gas prices higher under Joe Biden. And I don't see how the Democrats are going to be able to make any credible promises either.
Okay, well, Cal, Lindsey Graham passed away the weekend just gone by on Sunday, fairly suddenly in the end at the age of 71, of course, as the Republican representative for South Carolina, a fairly key ally of Donald Trump in recent years as well. And perhaps, I guess, the legacy of recent years too, very frequently over and back to Ukraine during this conflict between Ukraine and Russia, and was probably a fairly key ally of Zelensky as well.
Yes. Well, he had just returned from a meeting Friday in Kyiv with Zelensky. He was very optimistic after he landed in Washington, saying that he thought a peace deal was a better prospect now than perhaps any time during the 4 years of that war. And then he died Saturday morning of an aortic rupture. A really, really good man. Now, a lot of people, you know, I know the Irish Times has a story today in which they're saying, well, he flipped on his attack of Trump. Well, that was 2016, and you had Marco Rubio and Trump and Jeb Bush, the former governor of Florida, and all these other candidates for president. Naturally, they're going to dump on the front runner. But Lindsey Graham was a consummate politician. He knew that he could gain leverage with Trump for his ideas, and especially his foreign policy ideas, if he supported Trump more than he attacked him. So if you're talking about flipping and flopping, politicians do that all the time in Washington. But I think in terms of his policies that he helped advance through the Trump administration, he did the right thing.
Marion, I think the legacy very much on defense and international affairs when it comes to Lindsey Graham.
Oh, he's a terrible legacy. I would completely disagree with Cal. And, you know, like Cal, I met him many times in Washington. He could be very engaging, but that doesn't cut you much ice as far as I'm concerned. If your principles are go from appalling to non-existent, you know, he threw over his great friend John McCain for Trump's friendship. McCain and he were barely speaking at the end, even though he tried to pretend that wasn't true. McCain asked Joe Biden to deliver his eulogy instead of Lindsey Graham at his funeral, which must have been a bit of a blow to Lindsey Graham. You know, he let down every friend he ever ever had in the Senate at some point or other, even on Zelensky. Remember the day after Vance and Trump ambushed him in the Oval Office, there was Graham calling for Zelensky to resign, you know, and so he has, all he wanted was proximity to power. He made dreadful foreign policy. He gave us Iran, let's not forget that. I mean, he was one of the huge talks who kept going, strike Iran, strike Iran. He was the same about Iraq. You know, he never saw a war, an opportunity to bomb another country that he didn't like. I had very little respect for him or his policies.
Okay, fair enough. I think a differing opinion. No great surprise between Gal and Mary when it comes to Lindsey Graham, who's passed away the weekend just gone by. So, again, is another one that's come up, Cal. These tariffs that, you know, Trump was so keen to put in over the last 12, 18 months or so. We've had another major refund. So $81 billion has been returned after they were found to be illegal.
Right. Well, I wish I could get a refund from the government, that even a portion of that. But yeah, the Supreme Court said that that was not constitutional. Only the Congress can do this. Congress has not done it. And so he has to repay the money. There are arguments on both sides of that. And I think initially the economic benefit was that imposing tariffs was fairly positive. But the court has ruled and he's got to do it. And he is doing it.
Marion, it seems these are being challenged time and time again now.
The tariffs?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what? You can't argue. Well, actually, that's not true. You can argue with the law in America now. Certainly, the Supreme Court has had some pretty interesting interpretations of late. But the law was clear on this. You look at a first-year law student would know that these tariffs were illegal. And when they were illegal, he had to pay them back. And that's just tough, basically. And it's, the whole thing's been a mess. I didn't see any benefit to the US economy that could be discerned. US manufacturing jobs have plummeted under Trump, something which hasn't been reported or not reported very much at all. I don't see, there are very few new jobs. They're not just there are no new jobs being added in manufacturing. There are jobs being lost in manufacturing. So that was supposed to be the whole point of the tariffs. It didn't work. And now he's got to pay the bill.
Mary, will you tell us a bit about this story that's happening, that's an ongoing story where New York Times journalists are now going to have to testify about this leak around Air Force One and this alleged flight on a Qatari gifted jet by Donald Trump?
Yeah, you know, this is, again, just so bizarre because basically Trump flew out on the Qatari jet to Turkey, and then apparently they suddenly realised, having spent a fortune of taxpayers' money, it has to be said, on this Qatari jet, on retrofitting it and making it look like the last word in bling, they forgot apparently to basically make sure that it was security-proofed and that it could withstand a strike from I don't know, perhaps Iran, who knows. So he came back on the Air Force One, and it was reported then by the New York Times, and now they're being subpoenaed by journalists from the New York Times, and now they're being subpoenaed and being told that they have to basically name their sources. The whole thing, it's just another clampdown on the freedom of the press, and I will say there are still plans afoot for the White House Correspondents Association to proceed with their dinner that was scuttled when I'm not going to say there was an assassination attempt on Trump, but when an armed gunman ran amok at the Hilton Hotel. And you know, they're, instead of focusing on stuff like this, it's appalling the way Trump is going after the media at every level. And you know, that I see very few journalists speaking out against this.
Cal, give you a chance to respond on this one. It clearly would seem from the outside that this is part of Donald Trump's campaign against the media. This is a story that obviously personally affects him as well. Do you support the action that he's been taking and the fact that now we have the Department of Justice having these journalists being summoned to testify under oath about this story?
Absolutely not. I mean, this is not the way to go about it at all. The New York Times has done a valuable service in exposing this. I was against this purchase of this airplane from Qatar from the start, not only because of the possibility of hiding some kind of security difficulty inside it that might expose some things to our enemies, but also because I think it looks more like grifting, which is something that Trump and his family have been doing quite successfully for some time. But to blame the New York Times for reporting something that appears to be true is not good. You know, I think about Ronald Reagan. I mean, the liberal press was against him on many things in his policies. He would indulge in self-deprecating humor. He and a guy named Sam Donaldson, who was the ABC reporter, was always asking him hard questions. He would go over the media to the public. He had a great sense of humor. He didn't attack the media very often, if at all. And I think Trump has got it wrong. He's going to leave office. The media will be around.
Kyle Thomas, Mary McKeown, many thanks for joining us on The Last Word on the USA.
The Last Word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.